Blog Talk Radio.
Talking Earth Ancients, as always, and it's a Saturday. I hope you're doing well today. So much constantly hitting us about the old Earth. I always suggest people check the Facebook page because not only do I post information, but a lot of the people we have, a lot of the authors, a lot of the research investigators that are speaking on the program and have published reports of anomalous buildings, remains of humans, and just general ancient Earth post on the Facebook page. And, you know, my interest in all things prehistory is that there's an unwritten history that is just not being covered. This is the motivation for people like Graham Hancock, Robert Schock, Anthony West, and it goes on and on and on. Chris Dunn. I could, you know, spend the entire program reading off people who have written books about our planet that are not being covered by the orthodox scientific community. And why they're not being covered is that they don't fit within their paradigm, within the picture that they've written, within the history that they've written. And that's a huge problem for me. And as most of you know, my influence was my grandfather, who studied Native culture and had a massive collection of Native American artifacts. And as a kid, not only did I study a lot of the remains that he had, a lot of the artifacts that he had in his home, but he had a great library from some very early writers. I don't know if anyone had ever heard of a gentleman named Charles Fort, but Charles Fort wrote a number of books on Earth and the massive anomalies that had happened that not only Native people reported, but people in early England and Europe and even in America. Just amazing kind of quirky things. I think one of the most famous things that he wrote, one of the most interesting things he wrote was that there was a period in England where the sky got very dark and it started to rain, and all of a sudden, within the rain, there were frogs. They were like just literally frogs being hailed down on people. And we're talking small frogs, but still frogs, live frogs. And I'll never forget that story. He goes on to explain that people were perplexed. And, I mean, if something like that happened today, we'd all go, well, how in the hell did that happen? You know, it may be explainable, you know, but maybe it's not explainable. And anyhow, books by Charles Fort are something to consider. So Earth Ancients is about discovering our planet's distant past, a past that isn't documented, a past that is in mythology, a past that is recorded but not presented to us as a history. So I'm glad you're with us, and each week we have something new to talk about, and today we're going to talk about giants. But before we do, I do want to point out a couple of areas on the Facebook page that I think you should check out. It's Facebook, and then you go to Earth Ancients. It's Earth Ancients, Startling New Discoveries from Our Planet's Distant Past. And I want to direct your attention to the Casta Tomb. It's called the Casta Tomb. When they discovered it about 2 years ago, it's a magnificent, massive tomb, and they thought it was the tomb of Alexander the Great or his parents. And since its discovery, they've carefully excavated the main entrance where the sarcophagus is held, and it turns out it's not the tomb of Alexander the Great, but they're not sure who it is. It's either his father, his mother, or some very wealthy nobleman. But what scientist did is take the entire research and create an animation of how it appeared when it was first built over 2,000 years ago. And this the title is The Casta Tomb, Unknown, The Casta Tomb of Ancient Greece. And it's fantastic animation because not only do they correctly reproduce how the interior looked from the findings, they actually show the interior, the massive circular temple that's built on top of the sarcophagus. And I really strongly urge you to take a look at it. It's one of the most well-designed animations that I've seen. And we still, like I said, don't know what the Casta Tomb is all about, who's in it. And as they dig down, we're hoping for more details about the actual individual who was buried there. So take a look at that. Each month, I try to post something in terms of artifacts that what I call are out-of-place artifacts. And you got to see this one. It's a technologically sophisticated artifact. It's actually a metal cup. And they found this cup, let's see, in 1949. And it's an iron cup that was cut away from a block of coal. It was found deep in a mine. And when they dated this, apparently the Oklahoma Geological Society looked at it, and it's in a place called the Wilburton Mine Coal Mine. And when they did the analysis, the date came back as 312 million years old. Now, that's a mind-boggling number. And it's just beyond our comprehension. Now, it's beyond our comprehension if you follow the texts of Western scientists and their understanding of and their story of our history. But if you follow Hindu history, the Yugas, the Vedas, mankind, according to that doctrine, goes back millions and millions of years ago. So from an Eastern philosophy, 312 million years ago is not that startling, because according to those doctrines, human beings were on the Earth that long ago. But you got to see this cup. They have a picture of the block of coal, and the fascinating thing about it is it's not like they can fake it, because there's an impression on the block where the this cup was laid, where it was cut out of, and so it's a perfect impression where it was sitting. So when they knocked it out, when they cut it out, it was from this block. So do check that out. The title again is Out of Place Artifacts, and I posted it a couple of days ago. It comes from one of Michael Cremo's books, and we had Michael Cremo on the show. Cremo's a fascinating character. He's a scientist, and his books on anomalous ancient artifacts really proves that mankind has been on the earth millions of years. And whether you believe it or not, this is hard evidence of man-made objects that have been discovered in deep layers of earth, hundreds of feet underground. So check that out. It's on the Facebook page, posted a couple of days ago. So I've been fascinated with giants for a while. We had Richard Dewhurst on the program, and Richard gave us his account and his research of a number of American, North American sites that have dolmens and rock carvings, and he even goes out to California and shows that these are all structures and buildings that were left by giants. And the book, it was satisfying to a degree, but my guest today has written a fascinating book called The Lost Race of the Giants. And not only does he pull the mythology of the giants that were on Earth, he actually gets scientific and actually shows us what is a line of giants that have been researched and actually documented, true giants that have lived on Earth. So my guest today is Patrick Christopher Chouinard, and Patrick is a writer. He's a freelance journalist and a former producer of Archaeology TV. He was the previous editor-in-chief of the New Archaeology Review and the author of Forgotten Worlds. And Patrick's coming to us today from Florida. And Patrick, your book is fascinating. Really great to have you on the program today.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
You got to tell us, what was your interest in giant humans, and really, and I'm writing a book myself. What compelled you to actually put pencil to paper and write this book?
Well, from another perspective, actually, I was first very impressed by some of the things that David Hatcher Childress had to say in one of his books. I can't remember exactly which one it was, but he did release a book, I guess early in the 1990s. I was reading an e-book one day when I was actually doing the edits for Forgotten Worlds. And so I started writing a kind of a, I remember from watching Ancient Aliens, by that time just came on the air, and I was impressed by their use of mythology, history, archaeology, religion, politics, economics, technology, and basically was able to draw all those vast perspectives and interest into one cohesive format, which basically enlightened us all to the idea of ancient aliens and tried to describe them in a very impressive format. And so I continued to read David Hatcher Childress's book. So I came out with the idea of first writing a article in Lost Civilizations and Secrets of the Past, which had, believe it or not, Eric von Daniken, Zachariah, mm-hmm. Extension, and some of the major authors at that time, I think even Graham Hancock wrote one, and including okay. Frank Joseph, my friend. And it was basically telling out first the mythological perspectives that I had at the time about all these ancient myths of giants throughout history. And so as time rolled by, I started really thinking about bringing something original to it. So my first perspective is to take that and make a book out of it and set the precedent for the giant argument. And then once that was out, to begin another book which would describe in depth the theory, which I intended to draw everything together at mm-hmm. once about all the ancient mysteries issues that Graham Hancock and Robert Schock and John Anthony West with the pyramids and the megaliths and things that the ancient aliens constituents talked about, bring it all together in one format, in one theory, like my own theory of everything, and it would basically tell everything we need to know about ancient mysteries in one single book, and I plan to call that The Truth About Giants. But back to this book, by the way, I don't mean to digress one second, but I did notice you were talking about the supposed tomb of Alexander the Great, which was basically said not the tomb of Alexander mm-hmm. the Great. But I had
yeah.
a story about the Alexander sarcophagus on my archaeology TV program a number of years ago. And so I actually intend to, in another book I'm writing as an e-book, including The Truth of the Giants, it's going to come across, it's going to be available for the first 3 weeks, both of them, free. And then after
okay.
that, it'll cost money. But this book is going to describe that new discovery in depth in one of the chapters, so I just want to say that. But
yeah, we'll have
to
get your web link. We'll have to get your web link for that so people can access those e-books. So
yeah,
go ahead.
I'm developing it right now, but it's first going to be sold on the UFO store. www.theufostore.com, and it's going to go on to my own private site, which I'm developing now. Don't have a name
okay.
for it yet. But back to what we're saying, I noticed during my disappearance when I was ill that many of these authors, basically in a rather cavalier nature, took up my point and start talking about it, brought all the old stuff back into my argument. You know, aliens, the Anunnaki, you know, Graham Hancock would talk about his usual mishmash of old ideas, you know, the Antarctica, mm-hmm. Atlantis theory that, you know, I can't remember who wrote it. You know, I don't prescribe to those wild theories. And I think Graham Hancock's gone overboard. I mean, he's a great author. I'm impressed by him. He's always been my hero early on when I talked about the Atlantis issue. But as time went on, I diverged from the ancient alien issue and the Atlantis issue somewhat. And I started concentrating mm-hmm. first on a real race that existed all over the globe at one time, an ancient proto-Caucasoid race. And I started thinking more about the giants before the flood. And I came to a unique theory. Before the flood, and this is biblically based. I'm a born-again Christian, by the way. It's a biblically based theory. It starts with what we see in the Bible about the Nephilim. And then I take, from a biblical standpoint, I start to recognize that mythology all follows the same line. Now, one of the unique Greek myths is this myth of Deucalion. And in the Deucalion myths, interesting is it follows the same line as our story of Noah's Ark, but it says after mm-hmm. the flood, all life was destroyed, even man. And when that happened, there were two giants that were on the ark. And when they came out, they asked the gods, how do we repopulate this earth? So then he said, it's up to the giants to do so. And not only to repopulate the earth with new beings, perfect beings, that were far removed from the old beings, and when they did this, they were to teach them the wisdom of their former civilization
mm-hmm.
and the civilization of the gods. Now, the interesting thing about the gods were also giants. So we're seeing even the Greek myths and the Norse myths and all these myths, even the gods themselves, the people we worship as gods, were not really God.
They weren't the one we recognize as God, and they didn't have that status. They were like protectors, and they were protectors put on earth by God, probably the sons of man, as described in the Bible. Now, what do we know about humanity? We know about 50,000 years ago, and this is basically when the whole story of humanity is known. That's when the Neanderthals disappeared, when we see the first artwork, when we see the first trace of civilizations like Göbekli Tepe and the myths of Atlantis and all that. All that's real. And about 50,000 years ago, there was a decrease in human population. But we know all of humanity went extinct except a very few population. And so what actually happened here is that those few then carried on the human race. Or we all went extinct and somehow another race was created. I think God did this. This is what we call the Adamu, the bloodline of Adam. Those were the pure racial Homo sapiens. Now before that, they had another group according to the Hebrew Bible. And they were called the Ish. And the Ish basically is a general term describing all human-like forms that were not part of the Adamu, the pure bloodline, which were Hebrew, and I believe of pure European origin, pure Caucasian origin.
Right. But Patrick, your interest in the giants, was that derived from your study on ancient human populations? Because was it
very much genetic?
So that was the impetus for
evidence.
The Lost Race of the Giants is the title of your book. So you must have stumbled on so many groups of giants that you decided that this is that what the decision was made that you had to write the book.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm starting to think that in that disappearance, we recognize that the first group of people before that disappearance, there was a 13% diversity. And to understand the difference between that, we have to understand that there was a 1% diversity, okay, in today's population. All the differences we see of human population, of all the races, all the differences we see today are a mere 1%. So imagine if there were 13%. Now, these races of today are called subspecies. They're species, but they're not entirely a whole species. They're subdivisions of a single species. So back then, we had diversity in our population was 13%. Now, out of that 13%, we must have seen many different types of humans, many different types of human-like creatures, not to mention all the other races, like the Neanderthals and the Denisovans and all that, the race that we found in Siberia, which was part of my book titled Forgotten World. This is from Atlantis to the Ex-Woman of Siberia in the Caucasus Forest. Those two were other races. One was a subhuman hobbit-like race, and the other was another race. They found a finger bone in Siberia, in a cave called Denisova, where it gets its name from, and the woman. And they were actually able at the Stuttgart University at the Hans Planck Institute to then map its genome. So comparing the genome of the Denisovans, and when you take the Neanderthal genome, which they were able to create, and the Homo sapiens genome, we see a vast variety of human-like creatures. And I think that the giants that we see in our mythology were there in real form, and they were the most advanced of the races. That's where our myths come from. That's where the reference of the Nephilim comes from. And this is where the alien theory comes from. You know, Eric von Däniken wanted to see aliens from outer space with all this power. I see a totally different scenario. I see advanced races who are part of this culture, this humanity, this Earth, with advanced powers before civilization began.
Okay.
In a distant time, like we talk about Michael Kramer, with human life going back millions, if not billions of years, to the form of the creation. But unlike Michael Kramer, who thinks we devolved from this mysterious light-like creature. I think we were created on Earth as solid human beings, but in the distant past. You notice in the Bible...
Well, let me ask you about the giants, though, Patrick. So were the giants a true Earth-born race? The giants that you found, was that a...
Yes, Plato describes this. Plato describes the Atlanteans as an Earth-born race. And in Greek mythology, the name Gigantes, which where we get our name giant from, means Earth-born. Specifically, it doesn't say extraterrestrial. It doesn't say Anunnaki. It says specifically Earth-born. That's where I started really concentrating on the Bible and in the Greek mythology that describes as earthborn. And, of course, the Germanic mythology. Those were my first two concerns. And after I started reading that mythology and that religion, then I started taking in other realms, other types of mythology that coincide with this belief. And then I started drawing other things, ancient history, politics, religion, economics, and I start creating the Zest theory, which connected not only ancient mysteries, but our current world situation, all based on the giant theory, how we were created, what the giants left us in time, and what the giants and God, specifically God, the God of the Bible, the God of every religion, wanted us to do for him. And what did he want to do for us rather than some alien race, which I think is ridiculous.
So let's talk about, you just left on something, you touched on something that I think is interesting. In the book, chapter 2, the title is An Early Role of Giants and a Catalyst for Their Genesis. Now, can you give us some examples? I mean, in the book, in that chapter, you talk about an Armenian Stonehenge, dolmens in Western Europe, even Karnak. But in one specific area, you talk about Baalbek, Lebanon, which is a great fascination of mine because not only is there megaliths, man-made megaliths of 1,000 tons or more that were lifted into place to put that together, but the entire foundation and inner chambers of that building appears to be the work of massive human beings or an unknown technology. Can you tell us about what you found at Baalbek and why you find that could be the remains of a giant race?
Well, we got to look at Baalbek as a creation. We see in Baalbek this great series of constructions which date back from the Roman times, also the Byzantine times, all the way back to a time which this basically becomes indistinguishable. You see the Greek and the Roman, and all those different great civilizations building on that single foundation. And that foundation is what you're discussing. There is no known creator there. It's just this massive, you know, megalithic construction of interesting chambers and walls and that. And I start thinking, you know, it's so indistinguishable. Now I start thinking, is this a giant construction, or is it a technology that was later passed on to the Adamu when they took over the earth after the giants finally passed? You know, and how long were the giants with us? Well, we know from the Bible already some 2,000 years ago, you had Goliath, and when they, in the Bible, and Joshua talks about the scouts going out from Israel to start looking at these great structures in Canaan, and they came back from Jericho and says, you know, we were like grasshoppers compared to these great beings. There's giants out there. That scared the Israelites. But we know that there were giants living on to recent times. And, you know, we know from talking about when the New World came to the ancient America, not the New World, but the Old World coming to the New World, ancient America, we see an enormous plethora of reports of seeing yellow-haired giants, red-haired giants walking in Mexico and South America, and we see it in North America. So we know that they lived beyond up to recent history. But back to Beldak, so that was my main question. But if it is that subterranean, and if there were giants so recently, then I think, yes, they were created by giants. They were part of that giant mystique. And I think many of the megaliths we see formed were by giants. If you remember, when you see Merlin, and you see the old legend of Stonehenge, it said it was created by giants in Ireland, and later Merlin whisked Stonehenge away and placed it in Salisbury, England. So we're seeing right there in a recent megalith references to giants. Now, people say, well, that's just myth. It's just folklore. But you see, how do we know? You see, we write things down immediately as we see them today in our news reports. Now, we have to understand that we were the same Adamu that we were then. If we were writing about giants, goms, and great things happening, we weren't like Eric Von Dankens, these bastardly type creatures that are so primitive they need aliens to explain how to screw in a stone upon a stone to make a piece of technology. You know, we didn't know how to use stone tools until the Anunnaki told us. You know, it wasn't like that. We see humans realizing that they're gods, these giants, and then the almost like a henotheistic religion like the Hindus. But God was the former god, and he was up there, and these sons of man were busy creating all this stuff. And then we reported this, that even like when we talk about the Bible wasn't written by primitive people making stuff up. They were witnessing these events in their own terms and their own ways, which might make us think they're mythological. We're saying, well, that's kind of literal, and how did they do that? But they're writing it in their own terms and their own language, the simplest way they could to describe real events. And
well, let's talk about some classical giants. Let's talk about some classical sources, because you have a chapter in here. The Greeks just litter their accounts in mythology of the Cyclopses and the Centaurs and the other gigantic human beings. Pick the most well-known giant, and let our audience hear what your research has found on the mythology of ancient Greek giants. I'm just really curious.
Yes.
You have a section here called Homer's Giants, which I found was fascinating.
Talk about that. The interesting thing about Homer's giants was they were finding the giants described by Homer, they were actually finding their bones. You see, Josephus, in the first century A.D., after Tiberius destroyed the temple, Josephus was a first century Jewish historian. He started talking very eagerly that the Romans and the Greeks were starting to do a different type of science. They were finding bones, and they were examining them, and they were documenting them. So even back then, there was archaeology and paleontology. Now, you remember in Richard Dewhurst's work, he talks a lot about 18th century finds. That's what the whole book is about. Now, what I talk about is not 18th century archaeology, but actually 1st century and 2nd century, even before that, in B.C. times, of Greeks and Romans doing what we would call paleontological in archaeological research. And I'd like to read a little bit from the book to tell you a little bit about some of the quotes I used, which will bring to light some of that discussion. See, it's the one section I talk about that is called Backing Up the Myths with Science, Excavating Giant Bones in Antiquity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, I started to work on Adrian Mayer's work and started looking at it and studying it in depth. Now, she had different conclusions than me, but I found her works a wealth of information. And that's what I used in that chapter or that section about Homer's giants. And I'd like to read you from that first and then go back to the other giants they were finding, including Achilles,
please do.
Ajax, and all that. So anyhow, let me get that section right here. It's right here. Okay. One section over. Okay, here we go. Okay, here we go. All right. In that time, we know that, first of all, in 400 B.C., or B.C.E., as I described in the book before Common Era, Homer wrote, on the earth then were giants. Okay, so the Iliad and the Odyssey for them were divinely inspired. They were in collectively the whole ancient Greek Bible. And they found in one area the bones of Achilles. And then later on, they start talking about finding the bones that Adrienne Mayer was talking about. And in that, she writes, here it is. The farmers and grandfather, Mayer explains, and this is something they found in Lydia. They found on the banks of Orontes, Orestes, okay, that was a giant, his 7-cubit skeleton, which was seized by the Spartans in Tegea. Now, I want to read you this. Farmer's own grandfather had told him how the Roman Emperor Hadrian came to pay homage to Ajax's relics after the skeleton was memorably big kneecaps were washed away out by the sea just across the strait. Hadrian embraced and kissed the bones and laid them out, apparently in the configuration of a man almost 15 feet tall. Then the emperor built a fine tomb for Ajax's bones at Troy. Have you personally seen any hero's bones? Asked the merchant. The farmer explained, less than 50 years ago, I myself sailed across the Strait of Sigeum to view a vast skeleton that eroded one of the rocky caves in the Cape. Sigeum, near Rhoeteum, was the Greek hero Achilles' traditional burial place. The upper body of the skeleton was concealed in a cave, but the rest of the bones extend some 10 meters onto the Cape. This is Mayer, 2000, page 117.
So
you see,
that's an account
they were already
of a giant
that
they found. Yeah. Wow. And what year was that they found that?
I believe it was back in 500 B.C.
Wow. Significantly old. Significantly old.
And to think they were all doing this before archaeology was even created.
Right. Amazing. Your book's filled with great references to various cultures, the Greeks, even the Native Americans. But in Clash of the Gods, you actually report and talk about the mythology of the Vikings. And actually, I have an excerpt here that I want to read, and then I want you to comment on this because it's based on Norse legend. And it goes this. This is how it says. It says, from a realm of cold and darkness came the frost giants, threatening to plunge the mortal world into a new ice age. But humanity would not face this threat alone. Our armies drove the frost giants back into the heart of their own world. The great cost was great. In the end, their king fell, and the source of their power was taken from them. With the last great war ended, we withdrew from the other worlds and returned home to the realm of eternal Asgard. And here we remain as the beacon of hope, shining out across the stars. And through, we have fallen into man's myth and legend. It was Asgard. It was Asgard and it's warriors that brought peace to the universe, and that was from the movie Thor, and that's Odin.
Yes, that's right away. One of my favorites.
Yeah, but tell us about the legends of the giants according to the Norse and the Vikings. That's a fascinating chapter that you put together.
Well, the giants of the Norse were very different from the gigantes and the gods and the Typhon and the different Greek gods and giants. They were very monstrous. They were created from ice and fire and reflected the Norse point of view. In fact, they embodied the Germanic dark side. And that's basically what they represented, the Germanic dark side. This dark side consisted all the way through modern history with Hitler and Himmler and the Great Holocaust. They have a dark side to them, basically bred from their very existence. Especially the Icelanders and the Norse themselves, who really never took part in this Holocaust. But the Northern Germanic race, they had an existence where they saw fire in the distance, and dark skies, and dark times, and clouds. And the sea was always part where they saw the froth and the salt at their nose. And so they started creating this dark mythology. And the giants of that time were hideous. They were inhuman. They had no feeling. They had no remorse. They just kept coming and coming without any reflection at the danger the gods gave them, like Thor and Odin. They just wanted to kill at mercy anything that lived. I mean, they were badass dudes. They were a lot worse than anything you could conceive in any of the other mythologies. And they were various. You had the frost giants. You had these giants like the Anglo-Saxons. They were Germans too. They, in their original myth, it became in later times Jack and the Beanstalk. You had these myths of, you know, Christmas giants, believe it or not, or Yuletide giants were part of their myths. You know, they were creating great areas. They were building mountains and building the earth. You know, in the beginning, when Ymir first was born, he was the first frost giant. The gods ambushed him and ripped off his head and basically dissected him, and all the flowing blood that came out of his body would go in a great deluge and just went over the primordial world, which there was no real earth, which they called Middle Earth, believe it or not, like in Tolkien, and Tolkien took it from that. You had creatures that were, some of these giants were like the orcs, so he took a lot of that from that, but you had a deluge that destroyed everything, and this salty blood eventually became the oceans, lakes, and rivers. And then you had his skull cap became the universe, the big, you know, ceiling of the universe above. His brains became the dark clouds. His skin and flesh became the animals. His hair became all the grasses and trees, but the maggots within his stomach became the hideous dwarves and creatures that haunted man and beckoned his every move. So you can see the giants went into the birth of the whole world of Middle-earth, and went into the creation of every being. So that's what's different about everything we know. Like even in the Greek mythology of the flood, the Deucalion, you know, its myth talks about a time when, you know, there's a flood, and, you know, giants kind of took the bones of all someone who's already dead, you know, kind of, you know, nicely arranged the bones and magically created creatures. This is no nice, you know, confabulation of creatures. This was a heinous, bloodthirsty creation. With, you know, every type of cold-blooded murder by the gods upon Ymir. And the gods themselves were giants, regardless, but they were more beautiful and more Aryan and more Germanic in nature. So they created, you know, the Vikings and the Germans created these beings out of their own selves, but created the giants as the antithesis of what they wanted to be. So that's what the giants
are. Is it your feeling that that mythology is based on truth and just maybe glorified in some way, especially
well,
in the Norse accounts?
I think they were creating real myths and real reports about what was happening. But even like you see in this Ancient Alien series, like when they see the supposed UFOs doing things, they write in a way they can explain best from their own experience. Like we would explain something we see from our own experience at our own point of view in our history. They were doing the same. To them, they knew about knives and battle and killing, like the Germans and the Celts were masters at that. So when they saw it, they were placing these creations, these vast floods that were happening at the time, the great age of cataclysms, as I call it, with the earthquakes and that happening. They explained it in a symbolic sense as this god being torn to shreds, you know, with the blood and the guts, and that's how they would come up with it. But they were really saying in their own way something that was really happening.
Interesting. You have a section, and we've talked about this with other authors, on ancient North America and the giants that roamed that area. Can you tell us a little bit about what you discovered in the North American giants? And is it your belief that they migrated from another area, or what did you find in terms of the presence of giants in America or North America?
Well, I think, in my current opinion, giants were probably placed around the area that the real humans were eventually found. You know, in the Middle East, up towards the Taklamakan Desert, where I think the Adamu were really created. I don't think they were made in the Middle East, like the ancient alien theory says, with the Anunnaki created. You know, I think they were created by God in what world was the real Garden of Eden. You see in many early 20th century theorists, there was a discussion of the Garden of Eden actually being in Asia and then migrating westward into India first and then finally into the Middle East. So I think the Taklamakan Desert would be the ideal place. That's where we find the ancient, you know, Caucasian mummies of China, which by any means at that time were already giant compared to the rest of the humans. So maybe this is one of the races of giants we see. You've got to notice that lost races of giants. I think that there were many giants at the time and many different types. But I think probably, you know, there were land bridges, there was a great mass. I think there were more masses in the Pacific. I think this idea of Lemuria is linked to that. I think, you know, when we look even at Australia, as Graham Hancock so wisely put it, there was probably a vast continent down there too. Robert Schock talked about Indonesia being possible Atlantis in one of his books. There was a great land bridge was connecting all those eastern, southeastern masses, including New Zealand, New Guinea. And we see, you know, a lot of red-haired giants and mummies there. We see them in South America. And there were a lot of going back and forth between the different continents and the land bridges that were existing. You see Madame of Malaski, when she conceived her world, and you look at her map, there was a greater landmass. There was less ocean and more land. And I think if this really existed, as she said, then there's possible. It makes it harder to figure out where these giants really originate, because if there's land masses that are no longer there, maybe the birthplace, as many of these original Lemurian discoverers talked about in their writings, it could be possible that they are far beneath the ocean now. But
so
I like to
these
think
are,
that
yeah.
didn't
these,
originate
these are
North
natural,
America, probably.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Originated in one of the older places and moved out.
Okay, so these are human beings that are of a genus that we don't really know about, because we don't have any giants that live on the earth anymore. But these
Correct.
Are naturally occurring giants, giant races of beings that were all over the continental USA. Isn't that correct?
Correct. And before we were here, so their longevity on Earth must have been extensive. They were already advanced, and they already had a great technology. But I even believe that maybe their technology was very different. I said this on Gaia TV, that our perception of technology, like look at Earth today, there's not a consistency from time and place. There is an overlap, things aren't linear in our development, and there is a non-linear look. You know, we see in the Arab region, we see a tendency where they have certain technologies today, but their culture is more primitive, and their technology basically came from the Soviet Union, like their AK-47 assault rifles, like we see ISIS using, and their tanks are Soviet-made, and then they got also some weapons they got from when we were giving weapons to Iraq. They have technology from that, but they're not making their own like they did in ancient times. But they still have knowledge that the ancient people didn't, but the ancient people at that same time had knowledge that we don't today. So there's an inconsistency that we see, like in certain areas of Africa, they're very primitive. But in today, you know, we are at the top of the basically level of technology. But we see that in ancient times, all of Africa and that were highly advanced, and Europe were huddling in the caves. So there's never a consistency from one point to the next. And I think that the giants might have had what we call high technology, but they could have been using psychic abilities. If the brains were larger, they could have had a greater grasp on psychic energies and psychic technology. They could have used stone, but knew how to use them in different ways. We see from archaeologists looking at Göbekli Tepe and all these great Asia Minor discoveries, like the Hittites, the ancient people there in the Middle East, where the ancient Aryans were supposed to come from at one theory at one time. We see the fact that they had these great abilities to polish and shine with instruments that might have been more advanced. They were stone tools, but they were only 2 meters in diameter, and they could shine it and cut at a greater level of sophistication that we can't do with our lasers and everything today. Like Christopher Dunn wants to put in lasers in ancient time. We don't need lasers in ancient time to cut these things. They were using stone tools and sophistication that we can't duplicate them today because we don't have the knowledge they had. It wasn't passed on. So it's hard to try. We're out of place. We can't conceive what they thought because we don't have the invention knowledge that they did back then. So we don't have to explain them with lasers. That technology wasn't known to them. They were using different types of different. Lasers is our technology. The Adamo in modern times, we don't see it occurring in ancient times, but we see technology that we can't conceive of or even remake today. So the giants were using great technologies that they couldn't imagine.
Is it your belief, and you spend quite a bit of your book on this, that the Sasquatch, the Bigfoot, and these other what appears to be possible extractions from giant humans are not only not a myth, but they actually live today and are derivative of a giant race of beings. Tell us a little bit about the Sasquatch, because you actually spend part of your book talking about the Chinese giant Sasquatch, and then in Americas.
Yeah. Gigantopithecus was its name. It was an Asian race that lived some 12,000 years ago, descended from African tribes of pre-humans, or the Ish, rather, as I call them, who moved over at one time and then began settling in Asia. And as that happened, they started to evolve and get bigger and stronger. And these races then had the opportunity to then migrate into the New World when there was a land bridge from us in Asia. So anyhow, we see this in massive times. And there was an incident when these great creatures were able to evolve into Sasquatch and the Yeti and all these tremendous creations. And there's no explanation other than scientific explanation that they were the direct evolution of Gigantes. Now, let me point to this point. I don't believe in evolution of the Adamu. I think Bible clearly states that they were created by God to go from the Garden of Eden and onward. But you notice in the Bible it just says that certain things were created in the air, in the sea, on the land, and doesn't say they didn't evolve. They just said that the creatures of the land, the air and the land, the air and the ocean were created. It doesn't say anything about them really, only that they're ready at one time being named by Adam. So we can imagine that since it doesn't mention that, and since there's mention of another world at one time, that they were actually evolving at that time into immense creatures and over an immense period of time. And this would apply to the Ish. So I think there's evidence of evolution from the Gigantopithecus and all these other races in Africa into the Sasquatch and into other areas that were Sasquatch related. So that would be excellent.
Wow. That's fascinating. I'm fascinated by antediluvial or pre-flood races because it's my feeling that there are a lot of very sophisticated cultures and civilizations that basically were wiped off the face of the earth during that calamity. But you have a section on antediluvial or pre-flood giants that are described in the Book of Enoch. Can you tell us a little bit about what you discovered about these giants and what their role was in that part of history that's really not discussed?
Well, in Enoch, basically the whole point of the story is they talk about in depth of the giants that existed. The sons of man came down to the daughters of men, and they started to create the Nephilim, the giants. And the more it talks about that, the more it relates to man. And this is where Eric von Däniken got off on. He started to imagine they were aliens. Now, what I would tend to think is that these aliens were not aliens. They were the giants, but they could have been more advanced forms of men. So they were very human-like. We know in the Genesis Apocrypha, which discussed the part of Genesis where the giants lived and about Noah, they even suggested that Noah possibly had somewhat of a giant lineage. So that's why he was described as righteous above everyone else, which in a sense would describe us as part of that experience. We have giant blood in us, giant DNA. Now, we know on the Ancient Aliens show they talked about DNA that wasn't quite human. Why does it have to be alien DNA? What if that was the giant DNA that's clearly talked about in the Genesis Apocrypha? Noah was one of the sole survivors of the flood. He passed on that bloodline to followers that survived the flood. Again, we go back to the Adamu in the human genome. Maybe the beginnings of the Adamu were really there. Now, this is where we shift around the Bible. We could see things that weren't quite consistent. These are bringing other mythologies in. The Bible was the best testament to the Hebrews, and it was the Hebrews' history that part of the Bible was discussing. It wasn't that it was discredited or wasn't the Word of God. It just depicted the Hebrew side of it. So when we bring the other mythologies in, we actually gain a knowledge of the rest of the picture. So we're seeing even when we see the Deucalion and the giants coming out of the ark, we see that lineage described in Noah. We also see in the Book of the Giants further description of the giants, and that was found actually in a section of the Book of Enoch that wasn't complete. The Book of Giants comes from the Dead Sea Scrolls. It was written in those documents.
There's actually a Book of the Giants?
Yes.
In the Dead Sea Scrolls?
It was an extension of the Book of Enoch that wasn't found when they found the Book of Enoch years later, in the 19th century. So when they found the Book of Giants, it completed the story. It was in-depth even more so. And we see that in Dead Sea Scrolls. It wasn't totally complete, but what it gives our opinions of the Enoch, it just creates a deeper image. And to understand that, I would suggest you go to my book, because I can't reveal everything in my book, or there's no reason to read my book. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah, I want the money, you know?
our audience is going to want the book. I have only touched on quite an in-depth book, and I suggest that you wouldn't be on a show if I didn't want our readers to read the book. So I definitely will suggest that they do find and read the book, and I will post how to access the book. In the few minutes we have left, Patrick, I want to talk about something we talked about offline a few days ago, and that is your interest in the longheads that have been found not only in Central America but in South America. And these are turning out to be a race of beings that so far I do know personally of a number of grave sites that have been found in Central America. And
by Brian Forrester.
Brian Forrester has found them in South America, but in northern Mexico and in the Yucatan Peninsula, there's actually evidence of a race of Maya or a strain of Maya that were born with long heads. Nothing like
correct.
The Paracas people that Brian Forrester had, but the Maya, this group of Maya, I want to say strain of Maya, had very long heads, and they're immortalized in a lot of their sculptures and reliefs, many times they're priests and men of knowledge, women of knowledge. But I want you, if you would, tell us a little bit about your feeling on the connection of these long heads. And by the way, we've had one anthropologist and one artist who is very familiar with anatomy believes that based on the skeletal remains, these were significantly big people. They were much larger than normal humans, quite a few inches above 6 feet. Some of them look like they're close to 7 feet. So anyhow, that's my take. What's your take on that?
Well, I think that these giants, who I described throughout my book, have a link to these long heads. And when my Brian Forrester and I were discussing this, he says, well, I have evidence. I'm trying to find out evidence whether or not the elongated skulls were, in fact, naturally born. And I think he was doing genetic research at the time, and he's trying to come to terms with that. When I heard that, I started talking back to him. I said, you know what? I think these were part of my giants race. And I think they can be proven through further skeletal discoveries. Now, this Mayan discovery is basically confirming what I already suspected, that this elongated skull technology, or not technology, but tendency, was in fact this giant race. So now we're getting a picture about one of these giant races and how they look. Now that they're in Native America, and we're thinking, you know, we don't know who built Teotihuacan. That's a mystery. Only the Mayans and the Aztecs all said the gods created them, and they brought us the technology to build our monuments. So here we're seeing my story being discussed in ancient Aztec and Mayan mythology, actually
mm-hmm.
saying it straight out. And they referred to them as giants in the Aztec chronology. So
right.
as it coming down, we're seeing my whole theory coming to the fruition in the last few years since I wrote the book.
Exactly. Well, hey, in the last few minutes, why don't you tell our audience why you feel that the book is an important read, and let us know, you know, what are some of the important aspects of the book? I mean, we've been talking about so much of this great book that you've written, but I'd like you to tell our audience just kind of in a encapsulation of what you find is important about this book to read.
What's important about this book is it takes the former ancient alien theory of having to explain everything in the world, everything that's happened in history, politics, economics, everything we know about ourselves, and trying to attribute it to some off-world source. And we're bringing it back to tradition. We're bringing it back to earthborn gods, earthborn giants, an earthborn race with a earth-based god, you know, who deals with us specifically. It brings us back to our Terran racial heritage. Our Terran race is, in fact, a human race. It means earther. And that's where we get the name Terran from the word terra firma, the ancient Roman goddess, or Terra, which is the equivalent of Gaia. It brings everything back, and it takes away this nonsense that's been going since my disappearance that took my book and tried to make themselves the experts and explain their own way and bring their own orthodoxy, if you will. They've actually created an orthodoxy of these traditional, now it's almost concrete orthodoxy about megalithic explanations, and their orthodoxy about the ancient aliens, and now that's all they talk about. Now, I'm breaking through this stringent, constant rehash of old issues like the mainstream scholars used to do, and I'm bringing new light into explaining these situations. And in my other books about other subjects, about history, economics, politics, religion, and, of course, my favorite subject, Christianity and Bible, I'm bringing all this to a new perspective. I'm bringing the Bible into new perspective. I'm bringing the giants into a renewed perspective that I want to explain to the world, the entire human race, that these things existed, that they're important, and that we need to grasp a new perspective, our whole understanding about our past. It's not with the mainstream. It's not with this new orthodoxy created by Graham Hancock and Robert Schock and John Anthony West, who I do admire and who are personally my friends, but I have to call out some of their tendencies to go back to their old arguments, and I demand from them to come up with new ideas and new precedent for a new age that's coming.
Fantastic. My guest has been Patrick Christopher Chouinard. The book is Lost Race of the Giants, The Mystery of Their Culture, Influence, and Decline Throughout the World. Thank you for being on the program, and we look forward to hearing much more about your upcoming books and material, Patrick.
Thank you very much, and please be on my show on WTAN, which is available. It'll be coming up this coming after Christmas, and I implore everyone to look on CanTalkRadio1480.com and start looking at the upcoming shows. And when you see my show, The Christian Archaeologist or The Radical Archaeologist, I think I'm going to name it now, I think you should look it up and listen to us, because you're going to be on the show too. And you'll hear my views of the world and my comprehension of the news. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. So that's it for today. Stay with us. Next week is the culminating show for 2014, and it's going to be a very special program. We're going to hear from many of our past guests. Dr. Heather Lynn will be the guest with us, and we're going to have a special talk with Mike Barra on new discoveries on ancient cultures on Mars and Moon and on Earth. So don't forget to join us. That's next week, December 27th. Have a great day.